Welcome to What's Your Poison? This is John Savage. You can go to johnsavage.com to see all the episodes, the many, many episodes. Also, please rate, subscribe, and share because it'll be good for my ego. This was a real treat. I had just done the episode with Vion, the TikTok, the amazing TikTok South African magician. And I don't know if they Googled me or how it came across, but Piff the Magic Dragon's manager messaged me and said Piff would really love to be on the show, which was absolutely tickled me. And I love Piff, so it was very surprising and awesome. You know, you probably don't know this about me. I'm a magic nerd. I love magic. I am a little closet magician, bad, but I still, for many, many years, I've got a little box of magic tricks, and sometimes I go through a phase where I practice them and pull them out at parties. I can't help it. I just love it. And so actually getting the opportunity to chat to Piff was really cool. I'd seen him on America's Got Talent. I'd seen him on Fool Us. So this popped up. Love chatting to him. An Englishman living in Las Vegas. He has his own residency for 7 years now in Vegas. And he's one of the top magicians in the world. So I feel really privileged I got to speak to him. We speak about a whole lot of stuff. And if you're a magic nerd, like I absolutely love Penn Jillette. I think he's one of the greatest human beings and one of the most, you know, Penn and Teller are the greatest magic duo of all time. And Piff, his name's John. I can't help but call him Piff, is best friends with Penn. So we spoke a lot about Penn and what an amazing dude he is. We speak about why he dresses up as a dragon, how he went on tour with Mumford & Sons by creating the shortest show of a competition where they had to try and had 15 seconds to do an entire performance. That was pretty cool. We speak about the reality of what it's like to live in Vegas and how it's handled lockdown, and he also does a trick for me. And really just this is a stellar human being who is doing really amazing stuff, who I didn't know I'd ever get to speak to, and I'm very glad I did. So without any further ado, here is the absolute legend, Piff the Magic Dragon, on What's Your Poison? What's Your Poison is proudly brought to you by Whiskey Brother. WhiskeyBrother.com. They make great whiskeys. They sell them. You buy them. You drink them. WhiskeyBrother.com.
All right. Where are
Alrighty.
You?
Alrighty. Where am I?
Yeah.
I am in the southern tip of Africa.
Oh.
In a place called South Africa. You may have heard of it. You ever been here?
No, I've never been there. I've got good friends from there, but never been there.
There's good people here. I'm in Cape Town.
Very nice.
Yeah, it is very nice. Where are you right now?
Las Vegas, mate.
All right. Well, great privilege to actually chat to you. I'm going to ask you first the most important question. Is that what are you drinking tonight or today? What time is it there?
It is noon.
Noon.
I'm drinking a cup of Starbucks coffee.
All right.
An American. What are you drinking?
It is 9 o'clock in the evening here. I am drinking. Actually, I bought this out. It's very weird. This you might appreciate it. It's a limited edition. What the fuck is it? Now hold on. It's a limited edition. Aaron, do you drink whiskey at all?
I don't. I haven't drunk for like 10 years now.
All right. Well, I'm not going to make you do it. But there's the thing that what made me think of you. I know this is like a lame sort of connection. Yeah. But the guys who made this, they were big fans of friends.
They were friends.
Yeah, so it's actually called a Tribbiano.
And it's, you know,
it says, how you doing after John Tribbiani, Joey Tribbiani.
How much have you been drinking that already before I got on?
I'm only about a quarter of a bottle in, but cheers to you and nice to meet you.
Cheers. Nice to meet you, buddy.
Mm. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And it's very surreal, you know. I'm sure. Well, let's start with Vegas. What is Vegas really like? I mean, as a Brit in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I've been here 7 years now, and when I moved here, I was like, Well, you know, just before I moved here, I came out to go, hey, do I want to move to Vegas and live here? Mm. And I was lucky enough to get friendly with Penn Jillette and Matt King and Teller. And they sort of told me, they were like, hey, it's like, if you want to do magic professionally, if you want to like work on your act and do your show every night, Las Vegas is kind of the only place to do it. So, and it happens to be, I mean, I love like that hot weather. I can't stand England for the weather because it's like it rains 11 out of 12 months and it's freezing cold. So I was like, get me to the sun. So a desert is perfect. I'm a reptile. I'm cold blooded. You know, it works out very well.
Yeah. Did you meet Penn and Teller before, like the Fool Us and all that stuff? Were you like in the wing? How do you just meet Penn and Teller while you were a youngster roaming around Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, I met Penn and Teller before I even came to Vegas. I did a show called Penn and Teller Fool Us in the UK, where you had to go on and do a magic trick and attempt to fool them. So I went on that and did a magic trick, but they're Penn and Teller, so I was like, there's no way that, you know, who cares about fooling them?
Yeah.
The best thing you can do is entertain them. So I was like, you know, my typical dickhead dragon self, eating a banana, ignoring what was going on. And they loved it and took me under their wing. They kind of adopted me. And years later, they've turned out to be, I mean, you know, Penn's one of my best friends, and Teller works on magic with me and helps me, you know, in my show. I mean, it's just incredible.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy because they are
amazing. Sorry, carry on.
They are absolute geniuses. You know, they are the best. They're the best of the best. So, and to be able to work with them is amazing.
They're a lot more than that. You know, like I don't know them obviously, but what strikes me is how they are on that show Fool Us.
Yeah.
How respectful they are at all times, how appreciative they are. Like, even if someone is shit, they are so supportive. And then all the other mad shit they do, like, they just seem like exceptional humans.
I think I often say to them, how on earth are you getting this much done in a day? Because it is inhuman how they, how much they are achieving every year. But they're just... like I say, they've just been kinder to me than anyone I can think of in the business. So I owe a lot to those two.
So were they the catalyst for you to move to Vegas? Is that what you or you...
No, the catalyst was I got a show. I landed a show out of the blue, a small part in a much bigger show. Mm. And my agent said, you know, they're pretty serious about this, so it's happening. So I went over and did a couple of like workshops for them and tried it out, and it worked out really well. I was like, okay, maybe let's try this. So I went over, came over, and I signed a 10-year contract with like a 3-year minimum, and I was like, I'm going to be here for 3 years, and then the show closed within 7 months, and I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do now? I'm in Vegas, and
all I have is this costume of a dragon.
All I have is this stupid dragon outfit. And also, I'd applied for my green card. And when you do that, there's a period when you can't leave the country. So I was literally stuck in America, unable to work for like 4 or 5 months. So yeah, it was a little nail biting.
And I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of your stuff. You're a fucking exceptional magician hidden under like the dry stuff. You might, and it feels to me like you got started quite late. Did you? What were you doing before you actually started to really get your due uppance?
I was working as a regular magician without the dragon skin.
Huh.
That's what happened. I was for 10 years. I was a close up magician, going around to like parties and restaurants and bar mitzvahs, and I was getting fired everywhere because I was way too grumpy. But I wasn't really. I just said resting bitch face. You know, it's like an English tradition. I was genuinely happy, you know, to be there. And people were just like, what is wrong with your face? You look so angry. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm I did a wedding and this guy came up to me and he was like, what is your problem? You're like the Eeyore of magic. And then he fired me because he was the groom. So I wasn't really cut out for it. And it turned out that what I needed was to be a dragon, because a grumpy dragon is a hilarious, you know, it's hilarious. A guy in a dickhead in a dragon outfit is hilarious. Regular dickhead, not so funny.
So, I mean, answer this honestly. Is the grumpy part of the routine, or are you just that is who you are? I mean, was it just not working for you?
Yeah, that's who I am, and I don't even notice it. You know,
yeah.
It's not like I don't even think like, oh, now I'm being grumpy. I just like, oh God, what? This is what we're dealing with today, and you know, I'm a very much like on stage, off stage person. When I'm off stage, I like to be invisible. Don't like anyone to, you know, even though I'm there, I like my own company. And on stage, obviously, it's the opposite. You know, I want everyone to be watching me. So whereas I got friends who like, they're natural show offs. They love being the center of attention at things, and so they were much better at doing these sort of like restaurant gigs or these weddings where they want to go to a party and be the center of attention, whereas I just wanted to go there, do my 6 to 8, you know, routines and get the hell out of there. And it turns out that that being able to put on and take off a dragon outfit is the perfect way around that.
I will tell you something. One of the things I really relate to this, and that is many years ago, and it's sort of become semi-legendary here. I went to a music festival, and I had a couple of bad experiences at this music festival, and I really wanted to go incognito. And I knew a lot of people there. So the one time I just dressed up head to toe, it wouldn't be sort of acceptable today. It was a gold suit, an afro, big dark shades, and I just was a dick to everyone the whole time. I was like absolute, and what I found was, being in that character, people actually really appreciate, like, something about dressing up as someone else. People are a lot more accepting of, they almost like want to you to be a dick in front of them.
Right. I found that one of the big things about doing close-up magic is you have to walk up to people and say, hey, I'm here and I'm going to do magic tricks. Mm. And usually at these aren't places where people have ever paid to see a show. They're in a restaurant. They're going to their friend's party. You're interrupting people for a living, you know? And so I always used to feel horrible about it. And then when I found my inner dragon, or my outer dragon, really, and I would go to these parties, people would come to me and they'd be like, what's going on? What's happening? And I'd be like, oh, no, this is not for you. Nothing. Just walk away. And they'd be like, no, show me something. Show me. And I'd be like, you don't deserve it. It would be beneath me to perform for you. So, and by the end, they'd be begging me to do something. And I'd be like, all right, fine. And so the reaction would be off the charts.
And any reason that you are a magic dragon?
Yeah. Not a good one, but a strange one. My sister had a dragon outfit under her bed. And I was invited to a costume party. And I said, I need a costume to wear. And she said, I have a dragon outfit under my bed. And I didn't ask any further questions because it was my sister. So I just borrowed this dragon outfit, went to the party. No one else was in any sort of like costume. It was just me. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And my friend was like, oh, yeah, we changed it. We thought it was a bit childish. I was like, you're kidding me. I've just walked across London in a dragon outfit on my own. And so I started, you know, that those were in the days when I was drinking. And I was drinking red wine in the corner. And my friend said to me, you should do this in your act. You could be Puff the Magic Dragon. I said, wait, I could be Piff the Magic Dragon. You might have heard of my older brother, Steve. And I was right. Like, oh, that's a funny joke. I should try that. And it took like 6 months to do it. But as soon as I did it, I was like, wow, this really makes up for this face.
Can I ask you something? Do you know the South African magician Vion?
No, I don't.
Vion van der Berg. So he's the biggest, he's like one of the biggest TikTokers in the world. This is sort of, well, this is what I'm assuming. So this podcast is, I mean, look, it's doing very well around the world, but I don't have a lot of magicians on until I did Vion the other day. And then I heard from you guys. So I thought there might've been a connection. So Vion is this young comedian from a small town when fuck all happens in South Africa. And he does these little magic tricks and he's become one of the biggest TikTokers on the planet. He's like, I think he's number 240. He's got 12 million.
Oh my God.
Followers on TikTok.
Oh my God.
I thought maybe
we just joined TikTok. We got 120,000. So we're at 1%.
Well, I mean, I actually checked his, I mean, it's interesting because I think what he said was he's had a lot of magicians tell him that he shouldn't be doing what he's doing on TikTok, but he's cracked a whole fucking, like universe in TikTok and which magicians, is doing it.
Magicians love telling other magicians what they should or shouldn't be doing.
So I've heard.
And it's usually the magicians who have time to tell those, you know, only reason they have time is because nobody's booking them.
Well, so, not everyone has a residency in Las Vegas, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of people when I started and they had very firm opinions on me, evolving into a magical dragon, and none of them were positive, but right, I was just like, oh, I'll just do what I want. And, let's see how it works out.
That seems to be the trick
there. You know, cause if they're right, then it's not like they're giving me another idea. If they're right, all I do is stop and I go, okay, well, I'll just won't do that then. Whereas if I'm right, then I'm never going to know that if I just stop. So I just have to keep going. And then, see what opens up next. That's what you never know. You never know what's going to happen next.
I mean, I don't know enough about it. One of the big, massive transformations for the magic world, which must be hard for more established, well, magicians who've been around longer, is because of the internet. You can sort of figure out quite a lot of the tricks. So you've got to really bring something different to the table. Or is that not... I mean, just
I
the fact
so.
That you can...
I think so, but I think you've always, you know, it's just accentuated a problem that was always there. And the only way around that, it's the same as comedy. The only way around it is to be good and to create new material and to create things that people aren't doing. And if you're not doing that, then yeah, it's not going to happen for you.
Can you tell me about the day that you got a call from Mumford & Sons? Because to go on tour with them.
I didn't actually get a call for them. What happened was I was doing a show in New York at Radio City Music Hall, and I'd won a competition to do the world's shortest gig. So I was there to do 15 seconds of my act. Now, 15 seconds is good evening. My name's Piff the Magic Dragon. You might have heard of my older brother, Steve. That happens to be 15 seconds.
Was that your whole act?
That was my whole act. So I walked on stage and I did that and I left and I walked, you know, I walked across one side of the stage to the other and I found myself in the wings of Mumford & Sons and they were like, oh, this is hilarious. You've got to come on tour with us. And I was like, yeah, sure. So we just tried it at this one gig, right? And there was this other great comedian on before me, but he just bombed. You know, it happens to all of us. And he had a bad night. He absolutely stunk the room out. It was bad. And so the crowd was angry. And I went on and I just had one of those transcendent sets where
just killed it.
And it's like the roof came off and I was just like, oh my God. And I got a standing ovation from everyone there. Like, honestly, that's in my top three gigs of all time that I've ever done, that first show for them. And they were like, yeah, you've got to come on tour. And so we ended up doing these theaters all over the UK, which is great. You know, they were like 1500 seats to 3000 seats. Great. And then we did arenas and that was a kind of a nightmare because 20,000 people trying to figure out where the dickhead dragon was kind of my experience. And what happened was I think we did about a month of arenas. Half of the time, then I was crushing, and there was nothing like crushing. It's amazing. Crushing in an arena, phenomenal. And the other half, absolutely bombing. Like Right. Absolutely dying on my stupid little tail. And
well,
there is
rock and roll crowd is a different animal.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And there's nothing worse than bumming in an arena. It's like the highs and lows are polar opposites. So it was kind of one of those months where I just came away feeling kind of ill. But I had such a great time with them. And you know, you always hear like, oh, so-and-so's the nicest guys. But they're just great, great people. Mm. And they looked after me really well. And you know, and if you know, whenever they come and play Vegas, then we get together and have a good time. The last time Winston came over, we played. He wanted to play roulette. Now, when a casino gets a call that a famous musician wants to play roulette, then they clear the VIP room and they like host that musician in their VIP room, and they're very attentive. It's not like you or I playing roulette, you understand? It's like they're like, oh, yes, of course, sir, come this way. But Winston had a system where he would bet $100 on red or black in some pattern that was known only to himself. And he had a small
It wasn't card counting, it was just some lucky charm.
Exactly. And he had a notebook with him that we'd keep... that we would keep immaculate notes of, and he would put the chip down. It would spin round. He would either win, get his money back, or lose. And he would write this down in his tiny pen on this notepad. And it went on for 3 hours. And he came away with like, I don't know, $3,000 or something. But the dealer was just like, we cleared the room for this. And it was amazing. It was the best night in Vegas. And at one point, this other guy came in with about $250,000 worth of chips, put them all on the table with all of his douchebag friends. They all piled the table up high. One roll, he lost everything. He left back to Winston in his $100 chip. I was like living the dream out in Vegas now.
Jeez. You must see a lot of that. You must see a lot of weird stuff like that in Vegas, I take it.
Yeah, Vegas is a strange place. You know, there's...
You just don't seem Vegas. It's so cool. I love that.
Right.
It's just so mad that that's where you basically live and do your job. It's awesome.
I think it is. I think I'm definitely a fish out of water in Vegas. And I think that's kind of part of the charm of it. But, you know, it's one of those towns where you're kind of encouraged just to like, oh, leave all your inhibitions behind. Just come to Vegas and go mad. But actually... everything's very, very controlled, you know, very like carefully monitored, and you got all the security looking out for everyone, keeping everyone on the right side of having a good time. So you have these people who just come and they go mad, and then like 30 minutes later they're being carried around on a stretcher, they're broke, they've lost their money, they're back on the airplane by the afternoon.
It's so terrible.
Yeah,
it's fucking terrible, actually.
Yeah, but you know, it's Vegas. There's many other people who have a good time. Yeah, exactly.
Why did you, if you don't mind, I'm going to, you know, part of the theme of the show is really uncovering, you know, it's in the title, people's vices. What made you stop drinking?
Oh, I like when I was in my early 20s, I was, I got sick with chronic pancreatitis. Now you can get that two ways. One way is by drinking. I didn't get it by drinking. I got it because I was missing a tube in my pancreas. You have two tubes, ducts, whatever they call them. I was missing one of them. Everything was going through the small one. So what would happen is the small tube would get blocked up and my pancreas would start eating itself. It was horrific. I had that for 4 years and I got prescribed morphine.
Is that pain all the time? That's just
pain all the time. Chronic pain all the time.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I got prescribed morphine as much as I wanted and a bunch of other drugs to counteract the side effects from it. And I
Were you a grumpy dickhead before?
Yes.
I'm using your words there.
Yes.
But
I hadn't found the dragon.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. Sorry, continue.
So I was just in my shunned by society phase.
Right.
So I thought, you know, well, look, if one tablet makes me feel 50% better, then two will make me feel completely better, and three should make me feel 150%, because that's how the math works. Right.
Yeah.
So very quickly, I just started eating every pill that came close to me. And I was, you know, I was very sick. So I had my reasons. And after 4 years, I finally got better. But I realized that I had to just get rid of every, I had to literally throw out all my medicine because I couldn't be trusted with medicine. So I just threw it all out and went through maybe like 3 months of like, you know, rummaging through my bins at night, like a, like some sort of raccoon. But fortunately I'd done a good job of destroying the evidence. So after about 3 months, I was okay again, but I realized, oh, I've got a bit of a addictive personality when it comes to this stuff. So when you have chronic pancreatitis, you also really shouldn't drink. You shouldn't. It's bad. But after a year or so, I started drinking again. And then I started drinking like I was taking the medicine.
So and you were right, like, about your assessment about yourself, your personality. Yeah.
And so it started, you know, I got rid of it on the medicine and it started popping up on drinking. So there were, I had these three drinks. One of them, the first one, I did a party for a very fancy show business personality. It was doing close-up magic there. And it was all of the most famous actors in England at this party. And I, you know, one of those occasions when I was like, hey, this could lead to some really good opportunities. And it went from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. like that instantly. I have no memory of it whatsoever. Oh. And I was like, uh-oh, that's not good, is it? Just losing 4 hours at a celebrity party. That's really not a good way to live. The second time I got locked out of my house because there was a code on the door that I didn't know and I'd forgotten it. So I scaled this fence. It's like 20-foot fence. I scaled it in a sort of like, not blackout drunk because I remember doing it, but you know, in a thing where I was like, oh, this is a good idea. So I scaled it, flipped over the side, bounced off a hedge, landed, and went to get my keys from my pocket, and then I found the code in my pocket that I needed for the door that I just scaled over. And I was like, oh, I could have been dead just then. I was like pretty close to being dead because there were all these spikes. In London, on these fences, we have a lot of spikes. So, you know, you fall over and you just get impaled on these spikes.
You, come to South Africa, we'll show you spikes on fences.
I'm sure you can relate. Exactly. And then the third time, I took one sip of wine. I had a glass of wine. On my second glass, I took one sip and I was like, oh, I should get back together with my ex. And that was the worst relationship in my life. And I looked at this wine and I was like, this changes the way I think. And I put it down and never picked up another drink again. That was it. Here's the crazy thing. About a month after that, I got really successful and carried on getting more successful ever since.
That is interesting.
So it turns out I was losing a lot of time to drinking that I didn't even realize.
You see, there's a lot of opposite stories, and I like these ones. The one of the stories I always think about is Aerosmith, the band, right?
Yeah.
They were actually really shit through the 70s into the early 80s when they were total drug addicts and fucking madmen. And then as soon as they stopped doing drugs, they started actually making good music. And even though that's the rarity, I kind of think that there's something in that for some.
Yeah, I agree. I think it depends on your personality. For me, it was much easier to get things done when I wasn't obliterated half of the time. Whether that was on pills or whether it was on drinking.
Were you drinking as part of your before your gigs and stuff and during your gigs? Was it not really?
Not really. And whenever I did, I was worse.
Right. You know, so you didn't recognize that at least. So
yeah. Yeah, I wasn't like, I never needed to drink to do a good show, thankfully.
Yeah.
I would just like white knuckle the nerves.
What was Vegas like during this lockdown? I mean, how's Vegas survived this terrible year?
Yeah, it's been madness because in February, they were like, there's no way they're going to lock down. There's no way. You know, Vegas is going to be open forever. And then I was like, no, guys. I was like Noah, you know, building an ark. I actually built a TV studio in my house. And now we've got two of them. I'm in the second one here. But I started building that in February before everything was happening. And everyone was like, what are you doing? And I was like, you'll see, the flood is coming. The flood is coming. And
fucking magic dragons, they know everything.
Right. And then it just happened, and Vegas went into shock. Went into absolute shock.
Mm.
The casinos closed. No one thought we'd ever see that. The shows closed. Everyone was out of a job. And we thought it was going to be, you know, a month, maybe 2 months. And then, you know, the casinos didn't open for I think 6 months or so. And my show was the first headliner show back on the Strip, and it opened in October 29th last year. So we've actually been doing shows in like a socially distanced showroom with like all the COVID procedures in place, and doing a magic show, which is really tough because it's like, hey, can I borrow your, you know, can I borrow your watch? It's like, well, that's a nightmare in COVID.
Mm. And now, where is it? Is it sort of coming back on now? Back online? What's it right now? Are you still in the strict COVID times?
Yeah, it's coming back. It's coming back very slowly.
Because America's still a bit fucked, a bit weird. It's a bit, doesn't make much sense in my, like, their approach to COVID's quite weird to me, I think.
You know, right. I mean, somehow they've managed to, look, America's such a huge country that you drive an hour and everything changes. But somehow England and America have led the way in doing it badly. You know, my parents in England, they haven't been out of the house for like a year. I can't go and see them. It's just so messed up there.
No, that's hectic.
So yeah, between the two countries, it's not looking that great. But I think we're coming out of it over here in America, and slowly Vegas is opening back up. And hopefully by June, July, we'll be back to 100% business as usual.
Mm. Well, I hope so for you as well. How many gigs do you do in a week for a residency?
At the moment, we do 6. Yeah. But last year, I mean, in 2019, I did 400 shows over a year.
Jeez. So how are you doing 2 a day?
Yeah, we do 2 a day, yeah.
That's crazy. So,
yeah, I like 4 to 500 shows is a good number.
Fucking hell, that is amazing.
Well, you know, I love what I do. It's like...
No, good.
You know, like, I didn't work this hard to not do the show, so...
Tell me a bit about your magic philosophy, because, I mean, what's so beautiful about...
What do you think
you?
Of magic?
I'm a closet magician, right, through and through.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge fan, huge.
Yeah. But, you know, do you like David Copperfield style magic, Penn and Teller style?
I mean, I'm a big Derren Brown fan, for example.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the psychological stuff. You know, as a kid, Copperfield was everything in the whole world. And obviously now it's a bit camp and over the top. I love Penn and Teller because the psychology of it is what's so... To me, that's so fascinating. The whole idea of like showing you how to do a trick and then doing it a different way, or all the mad science. I love their show, like Bullshit, just because of all of the nuances in it. I love, you know, to me, the genius of you and what sort of drew me to watching your stuff was that obviously your costume. I mean, at the heart of it, you this totally fucking brilliant magician disguised as like someone who doesn't really care, who's not very good. And that sense of misdirection, I think that's also why I can imagine you going out to the first Mumford and Sons kind of gig and killing, because it's so, what you do is, the quality of what you do is so unexpected with the delivery, which is what makes what you do really special. You know,
I think, you know, I grew up not understanding magic whatsoever. Because I would watch David Copperfield, who I love. But like I say, when I was growing up, I didn't get it. I didn't get why he was escaping from Alcatraz. Because, you know, what was so bad that they put him in Alcatraz in the first place? But not bad enough that they wouldn't televise his escape. So none of it made sense. And years...
When he flew, that was... I mean, that just was... That was
it's
everything.
Mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing, but there's another part of you. There's a comedian in the UK called Jack D, and his line was, "Hey, David Copperfield, if you can fly, do it outside." You know, and that's like one of the paradoxes of magic. If you can do this stuff, then you shouldn't be doing shows. You should be the supreme ruler of the world. So it's very difficult to be a performer and say, I have magic powers, especially as the years go on. But it's also, there's kind of something great about that. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to be able to just be like, yeah, I'm a magic dragon. Deal with it. Because it's so stupid. It's like when Chris Angel says, I'm a magician, you know, I'm genuinely magic. I have a gift. Or David Blaine does. I kind of just want to be like, oh, God, really? We're doing this now? But being able to do that in a magic dragon outfit, you don't need to explain to people that this is bullshit. You know, and I've seen like even Darren Brown, you know, he does like these fake seances or these fake explanation. You know, he'll try to expose a supernatural, a charlatan by recreating what they do. And people still go, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're just saying that, but you genuinely
you're doing it for real. I mean, I love that shit. I love it. Like, you know who I'm obsessed with? James Randi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For that reason.
You're upset with James Randi, did you say?
No, obsessed.
Oh, obsessed. Obsessed. Yeah, James Randi was actually, he's the last shot of the special that we shot, the Piff the Magic Dragon special. We got James Randi in it before he passed away. Yeah. And because he's a great, great friend of, I mean, he's Penn really the reason that Penn and Teller, you know, exist.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's very difficult when you expose something to stop people believing that you're doing it. There's only one way to do that, and that is by being a genuine magical dragon and saying, I can genuinely do this stuff. And everyone goes, no, that's bullshit. Clearly, that's bullshit. And you're like, yeah, finally, finally, people understand.
Quite a genius gray area you found yourself in.
Yeah, so the next thing I need to do is the Piff the Magic Dragon seance. That's what I need to do, where I get in touch with the dead. I mean, maybe that should be the next thing, because that's the only way to really call bullshit on this stuff.
I like it. It's the ultimate expose, is that you cannot, no one can turn around and say that you're really doing it, because you're a fucking magic dragon.
You just can't. It's like we do all this stuff with the dog, you know, where we pretend that the dog is like drawing pictures or solving Rubik's Cubes. No one believes it, because it's a dog. No. So clearly that we're onto something.
It's genius.
With me doing this.
There's so many levels to this that I had not thought of, and it's blowing my mind right now.
Well, when I started, I just thought, oh, this is a funny 5 minutes. And it turns out it's like an onion. You know, you just keep peeling away and you're finding new things.
Hmm. Amazing. Did you ever meet, because of your America's Got Talent, did you ever meet Shin Lin?
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, his shit's fucking amazing.
It's great. It's like, again, it's sort of the magic that I like, which is like there isn't like another level to it where you're trying to trick people. It's like, hey, I'm really good at sleight of hand, and here's some sleight of hand. You know, I kind of like it when it's like on that level.
What's your magic philosophy is what I wanted to know about your approach to what you do.
I think that I try and make the trick as good as it can be, because without that, then the whole thing can just be like dismissed as a joke. So I try and make the trick as great as it can be, and as different and as new as it can be. And then once I have that, then it's like, how do I get people to laugh every 7 seconds? It's the same as a comedian, you know.
So then how much of your time is spent creating new illusions, and like how much of it is the science of the magic and how much of it is the making the magic?
A lot of it is spent creating and making. Because magic's just awful because it doesn't work. you can never think of a magic trick that works, because then it would just be you doing something.
Right.
You know, you have to find a way to make something impossible possible. And even once you found that way, you take that in front of an audience, and it's only then when you find out whether they even care or not. Often you take it in front of the audience after doing all the hard work, and they're like, nah, we don't really, we're not interested in this.
6 months in.
Yeah.
So are you, is there like, I mean, I already hear these discussions, like there's a difference between performing magicians and inventing magicians. And then are you the sort of middle ground version? You design your own stuff or do you,
I'm both, because I try and create, you know, new and original material. Everything in the show is like, is something that I'm the only one doing, and so that's a much more difficult way to be a magician. But it's I think it's worth it. It's like I love performing my own material. So
I read somewhere that you designed a trick for Penn and Teller. Is that real? Did I read that correctly or something?
No, I don't think not for Penn and Teller. I worked with Penn and Teller for years.
What does that mean? Work with then?
They every Tuesday they have a they have a rehearsal where they get all their team together, and then it used to be a guy called Johnny Thompson, but he passed away. And so when I was super broke, Teller said to me, "Come down, and you know you've got a good eye for things, you've got good ideas. We'll pay you to be in these rehearsals." So I went down and I did these rehearsals with them, and I realized very soon my role was to say every idea that came into my head, because it was usually so bad that it would free everyone else up to be like, well, I might as well suggest this because it can't be as bad as what that dickhead just said. but I did get a couple. I got like a couple.
You weren't dressed as a dragon during the rehearsals, eh?
Sometimes.
Oh, you did?
Sometimes, yeah. It's the most comfortable thing I own. It's got 27 right. pockets, you know.
Is that something you should talk about? That's a secret. That's a magic secret, isn't it?
No. That's just good tailoring.
Nice.
I go to these rehearsals. They'd be working on new things. I would suggest things. Most of my ideas would be dismissed. Occasionally, one or two things would slip through the net, and they'd be like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. But it was like 99.99999% Penn and Teller, and whatever that fraction of percent is, a little magic dragon input. But again, I was more there to learn as well.
It's kind of mind-boggling, this whole
the whole thing is crazy, because I grew up in Southeast London, and I was watching these guys on TV, you know, Copperfield and Penn and Teller and Lance Burton. All these are people that now are friends to me and that I've worked with. You know, we did a show last year called Tournament of Laughs, and we had Lance Burton, Copperfield, Penn and Teller in the show. And it was a pretty special time.
Incredible. Amazing. What do you think is the toughest thing you've had to overcome about what you do to become the magical dragon that you are?
I think it's something that I'm still working on a lot, which is like, how do you make it really, really funny and original and memorable and different? I feel like a long way away all the time. I always feel a long way away from where I want to be. I come off stage going, oh, I'm not really sure that was a thing. Now it's, you know, I take that with a pinch of salt, because the audiences come to the show a lot. So people definitely love what I do, but it's like, to me, it's like, how do I keep working on this? You know, what is the secret sauce underneath it? How do I get to that Penn and Teller level? How do I get to that Copperfield level?
I wonder if it's not my business at all. If you would be interested, if I connected you to Vion, maybe did something on TikTok with him.
Oh yeah, I'd love it.
He's doing some. Like,
I love
crazy
it, because it's such a new language.
Well, that's the thing. He's a youngster. That's the only language. You know, when I interviewed him, he said, I actually never want a show in Vegas because my whole act like works in TikTok. Right. And I can't imagine actually doing that. So he's figured out some little secret sauce there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I just love performing live. I love it. Mm. So I found the lockdown really hard, but And we did stuff online, and we did a lot of it, and I like creating that stuff, but it never takes away from like why I got into this and what I truly love, which is being on stage and and making an audience, you know, making an audience laugh, making an audience go, oh my God, how did that happen?
Amazing. Would you be able to A, show me a trick, and or B, teach me a trick?
Oh. Hmm.
I've put you on the spot here.
I could probably A, show you a trick. Let me see if there are any playing cards in this room. Hang on a second.
All right.
All right. And I'm back. Piff the Magic Dragon has returned to the microphone. I'm going to have to narrate this for the audio listeners.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Piff the Magic Dragon has got a brand new deck of bicycle playing cards. Ooh, fancy. He's opened them up because he feels that no expense should be spared in the making of this podcast. He's opening the playing cards up. He's tossing the box away as if it means nothing to him. Nothing to him. Now I need to get rid of some of these cards. Let's see. We got the jokers. That's it. Just need to take out two jokers. No advertising cards in the deck for some reason. That's weird. Isn't that weird? Anyway, we'll move on. All right, John. You're gonna. What do you want to do? You want to name a card, or you wanna see a card?
You're just gonna have to bring the cards into the picture. I can't see them yet. Okay. Must I name a card or watch or see a card? Okay. I just saw a card. I'm gonna do both. I'm gonna name the card that I saw.
Okay.
Which was the King of Clubs.
The King of Clubs. All right. Now we're gonna try and find the King of Clubs. Okay. And we're gonna do that. The King of Clubs. Are you sure?
Am I sure what? That I saw it, or that's the card that I chose?
That you saw it.
I think I saw it. Yeah, I definitely saw it. I saw it in the deck.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to try and find the King of Clubs in a slightly more unusual way. We're going to I'm having to do this card trick like a hawk.
I can give you more space. Hold on. I'm going to give you more.
Oh, there you go. That's a lot easier. All right. Now, whenever we've mixed up the card, you see how ruined these cards are? Can you see this? Half of the cards face up, half of the cards face down.
I see it.
What a disaster. Now I'm going to move the microphone into a much easier. Oh, now I'm coming around. There we go. Now I'm in business. All right, now look, watch. We're going to mix all the cards together so that we don't know whether your card's going to be face up or face down. You ready for this, Johnny boy? Watch.
I'm ready.
Boom. All we have to do is wait 25 minutes, and all of the playing cards are going to turn around the same way. Okay, well, you've made a noise. We have to start again now, John.
Every single one of the cards,
the same way around. Now, you saw the King of Clubs, right? You didn't see the King of Spades. Is that correct?
It was the King of Clubs.
The King of Clubs. All right, look, watch. One single card in the middle. Oh, it's the King of Clubs.
Yeah.
But wait, John.
Style, bro. Style.
I know what you're thinking. Well, Piff, maybe I was mistaken, actually. Who knows? Watch the King, boom, boom, as it vanishes and it joins three of its friends over here. I believe we should find, boom, all four of the Kings just there. I found every single one of them just in case, Johnny boy. How about that?
That's beautiful.
Thank you, John.
Very nice. I like that, man. Very cool. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you, John.
Mm.
I finished my poison.
So are you a big coffee addict?
Yeah, I love coffee.
What is your replacement for all the
coffee?
All
just
the coffee.
Coffee. Just I really like coffee. I drink as much of it as I can.
I can't do coffee. I do one and I shit my pants. And I wish I was joking. I'm not. I just ran away to
the toilet. That's interesting.
Stopped drinking coffee like a year ago, and the other day I decided I was just gonna have a coffee, and like 20 seconds about 10 minutes later I was running to the loo.
Oh dear. Maybe you have to push through it, you know.
I don't need it.
Maybe you just wear some protective underwear for a while as you go through that stage of building your stomach up to it.
It's not really worth like sitting through a meeting with your pants full of shit. That's my philosophy on it.
It's just very little, honestly.
Okay, lastly, let me ask you a couple of questions about where you grew up in London and where you went to school and what your parents were like.
Well, I grew up in Southeast London. which is one of the less pleasant areas of London. And I went to a school, and one of my coping mechanisms at school was to be like the class clown. So that was how I got out of the fights, was just by making, you know, like doing stand-up routines and that sort of stuff to get me out of trouble. And
those English schools, was it a boys' school?
It was an all-boys school, yeah.
Fucking brutal, man.
Yeah.
Brutal. Yeah. I lived in England when I was small, and I went to an all-boys school, and I was...
Which school did you go to?
Fucking destroyed. It was called St. Martin's in Northwood, Middlesex.
Oh, yeah.
And here's an interesting story you might appreciate after our last story. When I was 7, or was I 8, I went to boarding school there, and I shat in the bed, right?
Yeah.
I went back to that school to visit maybe 10 years later. And when I arrived at the school, someone came up to me and said, "I remember you. You're the kid who made a shit in your bed."
Oh, God. That's. I mean, who needs that? We all did stuff.
The fucking Brits. That's.
Oh, they're terrible people. That's why I left. They also slay dragons. You know, right. They're patron saint at St. George. They're horrific people.
No, they're the best. But so what was South East London like?
Southeast London was, you know, it was just like you said, it's just tough. It was, it was a trial by fire, and I'm glad I'm out of it. But I'm sure it contributed to the dragon you see before you today.
Friends and family, do you have them? Do you in England or in America?
Yeah, they're all in. You know, obviously, like I got new friends over here in America, but my friends and family, they're in the UK. That's the one part of this that I find tough is that you know, I maybe see them once a year, although there's a global pandemic, that doesn't even happen then. So, you know, when you're doing 400 shows a year, it's difficult to get in family time. But, you know, it's not forever. It's like, when is the line? You know, are you a 60-year-old guy in a dragon outfit? Probably not. 50-year-old guy? I don't know. 45-year-old? I don't know. I'm already a 40-year-old guy in a dragon outfit. So, you know, at some point I will stop, and at some point I will be able to spend a bit more time with the people that mean a lot to me.
So, I mean, the interesting thing, your career is really interesting. And I think you've had so much sort of, obviously, like mainstream success at the same, you know, I mean, I say this with only great respect because I'm a big fan of what you do. You're like this mainstream, you're on America's Got Talent, you're on Penn and Teller's Fool Us, you've got this, you know, residency in Vegas. But you're very largely known for those things. What comes next? I mean, like, well, let's say Vegas... Your residency ended. How do you progress into the next chapter?
Yeah, well, I might have more time to be able to do things, but we shot a special recently, which we're about to put out in the next couple of months.
Is this the one you said that James Randi features on?
Yeah. And you know, we're always like doing stuff behind the scenes and writing things and pitching things. So, you know, at some point, one of those will hit, and that'll be the thing that we do. But show business is a weird. It's a very strange business to be in, and I'm very, very grateful that I can do, you know, shows most nights and have an audience there who want to watch it. So that's, you know, when I started, I had no idea that it was going to become this successful. So it's definitely, I definitely try and be grateful for that rather than looking at the things that I don't have.
Would you ever come to South Africa, and why not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. But it's always like, you know, international stuff is always difficult with like touring. It's like a real nightmare.
What, I mean, so, COVID apart, why?
No. But I mean, the props are massive. I've got a dog. Like, we've got to get there. We've got to, you know, like the show in Vegas, or when we tour over here, it's like, you know, it's a kind of full scale deal to make the show look effortless. It's like a lot of paddling beneath the water.
cool. I mean, if you came here with a deck of cards and a suit, would it? Would you wouldn't be able to? I mean, is that not?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure we could do something like that. But I'm sure I could do something like that. But it's like that's like not what I spend my life doing. Like this full other show. So, yeah. But I don't know. Me and a deck. But yeah, Piff the Magic Dragon and a deck of cards. That's the post COVID tour.
Oh, there you go. Cool. And then last question before I let you go, and that is, okay. So let me just give you a bit of context to this podcast because it leads up to the question. This podcast. I mean, it's a very special show that I started during COVID and had no idea that it was going to blow up. And it really, we talk to incredible legends. We usually drink. I mean, not everybody drinks, but we usually drink quite heavily, and they get out of control some of these shows. But they're unscripted, obviously, interviews where we really try to get to know people that people really love. Right? That's the premise. The question is, it's the same question I have to ask everyone. Can you make a recommendation of someone you think should come on the show? Not that you've seen any of the episodes, but that's why.
Yeah, I think you should get Penn Jillette on the show.
I'll write that down.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Penn's one of my, closest friends, and you know, I grew up as an evangelical Christian, so that was like what my, you know, it was my parents' belief, and sort of still is. But you know, I've moved away from it. But one of the things was that it was always like, hey, you have to be nice, you have to be kind to people in order to get something, you know, into heaven or whatever it was. And, you know, Penn is obviously an outspoken atheist. And one of the things
he's got a podcast, isn't he? Called the Penn Jillette Sunday.
Penn Sunday School, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things I love about Penn is there's no motive behind his kindness. You know, he's doing it because he believes that kindness is what we should treat each other with, as opposed to, this is just how I save myself. And I always found that, that was a struggle that I had, was like, oh no, I've got to be nice. I've got to be a quote unquote nice person in order to avoid the fiery pits of hell. And, it's been a real like learning experience for me being around Penn and seeing somebody who doesn't have those stakes and doesn't need those stakes in order to just be a great human. So I think Penn would be a good guest on your show.
I appreciate that. Any chance you would give me a contact detail to get him, to invite him?
Yes, for the right amount, I will. I will definitely consider it. If you promise to get me into heaven, then the contact details are yours.
Heaven.
Perfect.
Done. Heaven, Penn. Cool. Deal. We've got a deal. Handshake.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that you say that because this is the weird thing. And I don't know if you can relate to this. A lot of people grow up without real principles, and we sort of have to learn them as we go. Like everything's sort of gray area. And when you meet someone who is very definitive about their principles in life, and they know when to go left, and they will know what's right, what's wrong, that inspires you, and you go like, oh, I want to be like that. I'm going to start putting those things in. And for me, Penn Jillette seems like one of those people who has just very strong principles, knows what's right, knows what's wrong, knows how he wants to be in the world, and fuck off and does it.
Yeah, I think so. He's got a strong compass, a strong internal compass. And I think that's what we all need, because it's like, right, I mean, you just get like buffeted around at the moment by everything that's going on, and it's difficult to know which way is up or down.
Right on. And what do your parents think about your career path?
Oh, they love it. They love it.
Of course they do.
Just couldn't be happier, which is great, because there was some rough times at the beginning. But
what did they think at the beginning?
Well, they were very kind and didn't vocalize their opinion. They were like, no, you know, you go for it. We're supportive. But obviously they were like, what the hell are you doing? Mm. And then it started taking off and they were like, this is great.
Amazing. John, it's been a real lovely hour meeting you. I've loved it. Unexpected for me, and really an honor. So I hope
you come out to Vegas and we'll go for dinner when you do.
Game on. I would love to, and love to come see your show out there. So,
and if I ever make it out to South Africa with a deck of cards, then you owe me the dinner.
Well, I asked you that because I actually, because I work, when I mean, things are weird now. I work with a lot of the festivals and all that stuff. Yeah. I was trying to figure out if there was a way I could get you out. Not to bring you, I mean, bringing your whole show as a tour, I understand that's a problem.
Do you know Puddles Pity Party?
No.
You got to Google Puddles.
Oh, Puddles Pity Party. Yes, of course I do. Puddles Pity Party, the incredible clown singer.
Yeah, we're going to do some double bills together. So that might be the way to do it.
Do you think you could help me get Puddles on the show? Maybe that's how we could start it off.
I mean, it'll be a silent hour, yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I could get Puddles and Piff and to South Africa for
Yeah, we'll
a
do
show.
It together, because then that's a lot easier. Then I don't have to bring as much, because I'm only right. doing half the show. That's the way to do it.
This is a done deal. And then, but okay, an off-air question, I guess. Do you ever get breaks? How do you book shows outside of Vegas if you're performing there so much?
Well, now we do like 32 weeks a year in Vegas. In 2022, we'll do 32 weeks in Vegas, leaving us 20 weeks to do other things.
Okay, I got it. I'll be in touch about that.
All right.
Be good and amazing to meet you. I've loved chatting to you. Thank you for coming on What's Your Poison.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'll see you soon.
Cool. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.